You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Conor Bromley, and I'm joined today by my favourite work colleague, Ned Keating. And we have got plenty to discuss today. It was going to be England-Brazil at the top of the order to talk about, but there's been some news or rumours, I suppose, linking Gareth Southgate potentially with the Manchester United job. I think it was Jeremy Cross from the Daily Star that was running this story yesterday, and it seems to have picked up a little bit of momentum since then. So that's where we're going to start today, Ned. So I suppose, what's your initial thoughts on this story? Do you think Gareth Southgate is the kind of appointment that makes sense for Manchester United at this stage?
Firstly, a great exclusive by Jez, a great get by Jez to get that. And obviously, much love and formerly of his podcast as well. We loved having him on, but a brilliant get for him to get that exclusive first up. In terms of Southgate's profile, I think it probably fits with the direction and travel in which Man United are likely to be going under Ineos, or Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos as well, now that they're taking charge of the footballing operation side since their investment. So in terms of Southgate, what he does, what he is, he's got a great track record with youth. Previously, before he was the senior England manager, he obviously worked with the under-21s, and he had other roles within the FA as well, looking at kind of talent development and talent identification as well, and kind of trying to progress the FA's plans around that as well before he took on the under-21 job. And then obviously eventually now he is the senior manager as well. We've seen as well that he's not afraid to give youth a chance, even in this squad as well. We're seeing Kobbie Mainoo is in it for England, first call up for him. We've seen it as well under him before. If you're good enough, you're old enough, I think, for Gareth Southgate, and I think that's going to be key for Man United, that they want to progress in this way. They want to, extensively go chasing youth, but definitely to kind of look at, bringing youth through, talented youngsters, and kind of build the squad. And we've seen, success with that at, say, Arsenal recently. I think that's what Chelsea are kind of eventually going to hope for as well, bringing a few young kids that can kind of be together for kind of, 5-10 years, building dynasties. So with regards to that, and as well, he's a great man manager, I think, and maybe that's what Man United need with some of the older heads that are still in that squad, that maybe they need someone a bit of a facilitator. Because you look at England, and you have to say that Gareth Southgate is a phenomenal man manager because of the way that he's able to get brilliant performances out of players that are subpar for their clubs. Harry Maguire, being a very interesting example in that, given the fact that we are talking about the Manchester United job. He has had his struggles at Man United, but he's never let England down, and actually he's probably played his best football in an England shirt in recent years, and that's testament to Gareth Southgate and his man management abilities. And again, there's others as well that he's able to do that with. But of course, it's his club management CV which would leave you slightly worried. You know, the only club that he's managed was Middlesbrough. He took them down to the Championship at the end of the 2008-2009 season, wasn't it? I think it was that he, you know, second season there, and he wasn't able to keep them in the Premier League. So that is, you know, as well as he's done with England, and we can say that, you know, people will point to the fact that he's not won a trophy for this generation yet. Well, the fact is that he's England's second most successful manager after Alf Ramsey in terms of he's taken them to a final and he's taken them to a semi-final and back-to-back tournaments, third place in the Nations League as well. No other England manager has that on their CV. So, we can say that he has been a success with England, England's most successful manager only behind Alf Ramsey. But at club level, he's, you know, we've got very limited scope to go on as to whether or not he would be a success. And that's the worry. I know he's wanted to go back into club management at some time. He said that for a while. But the concern there for Man United is, you know, it's been approaching 15 years almost, 14 and a half. It was, you know, autumn 2009 when they were in the Championship that he got the boot from Middlesbrough. But, you know, 14 and a half, approaching 15 years, probably if he was to take it at the start of the season, it wouldn't be that far off 15 years since his last job in club management. That is a very, very long time, and the game has moved on a very, very long way in that time. So he might be a different manager as well, but that would be a concern definitely for Manchester United fans.
What do you think of his England record translating to Manchester United? Because, yes, you know, you talk about him being the most successful England manager and that since Alf Ramsey. So, yes, that is true. However, I think the one knock on Gareth Southgate since he's been England manager is they have struggled to get it over the line in the big games. You know, you look at the Euro finals, World Cup semi-finals, you know, against France in the previous World Cup. There's been issues with England getting over the hump when it comes to them big, big moments. And Manchester United as a football club is a football club that needs to get over the hump in the big, big moments, and there's lots of them. And is that going to be a concern if you're a Manchester United fan?
Yes, and I think what you've alluded to there was something I should have mentioned in the previous answer, that again, for me, one drawback and one criticism that I would have of Gareth Southgate is I think he's tactically naive, and I think you get away with that a little bit more at international level, where I think you don't have that time to drill game plans as much, so you can be, you know, you can kind of get away with just having the best players on the pitch and telling them what to do, basically. But at club level, you need, you know, your tactics have to be good because it will change from week to week, opponent to opponent. You have to know how to work out your opponent, or, you know, what their weaknesses are, how to target them. You know, that 2018 World Cup semi-final, you know, England kind of sat back a little bit, didn't they, I think? And we kind of, you know, everyone afterwards said, oh, if they were more attacking, you know, they could have got to a final. And they probably would have got to a final had they attacked more. That's a criticism that we can definitely put on that Euro 2020 final against Italy. They were so far on top in that first half, you know, definitely that first 20 minutes. And yes, there were moments that if other players were in different positions, you know I always bang on about it, but Mason Mount, if he was the one that was supplying Harry Kane rather than Harry Kane supplying him with the pass, and that would have made it England 2-0, it would have been a different game. But England had opportunities there to put the foot on Italy's neck and make sure that they weren't coming back from it, and they didn't. They let them off the hook, and eventually they lost them penalties. So yeah, you're right in that respect. Tactically, can be naive, and there are concerns about his tactical nous, which will be more exposed potentially at a cup game, because you get more time with the players, more time that you're expected to know how to, you know, drill players and come up with creative, innovative game plans. And I think that we might see that more exposed in terms of, you know, I don't know, maybe Gareth, if he does get more time, you know, again, this is it. You know, I'm saying that you don't get as much time with the players, so you don't need an inventive game plan as much at international level. So maybe that's, you know, what's holding Gareth back from, you know, kind of using that and utilising that with England. Maybe if he was to get more time, we would see him being more tactically astute. But from what we've seen so far, definitely with England, there are question marks over his tactical nous and whether or not he's a bit naive when it comes to that.
Do you think this is the correct move for Southgate? Because to me, I think the thing he hates about being the England manager is being in the limelight. I get that impression that he doesn't enjoy the fact that he's under such a microscope. And if there's one job in this country that is more under the microscope than the England job, it's probably being the head coach at Manchester United. You know, it is, I would say, the highest pressure job in the country in terms of football. I don't know if you'd agree with that. But do you think this is the correct move for him in that respect? The fact he's going to be even more under the microscope than what he is right now. And it's going to be every week, not just every sort of 1 or 2 months when it's international time.
Well, in the papers this morning, it seems that Gareth's almost making his mind up already that he is veering you know, right now at this moment in time, you know, things can massively change between now and the summer. You know, he might be out of a job by the time, you know, England might go into group stages, so he might suddenly revisit this and change his mind. But right now it sounds like Gareth's veering more towards staying with England. That might be a reason why there is less pressure associated with the England job. The one thing I would say is that he's, you know, from an FA point of view, yes, he's done great, but the way that he keeps flirting with this is my last tournament, he never officially says it, he never fully comes out and says it, but he flirts with it quite a lot, doesn't he? Like, oh, you know, I'll consider my future after this. But it's the way that he says it. You know, every international manager will consider their future after a tournament, but it's the way that he says it and how he says it. You know, he's very non-committal about his future coming into a tournament. Maybe that's, you know, kind of ensuring that he doesn't set himself up for a fall, basically. But I'd be slightly annoyed from the FA that, you know, you kind of, he has been a great manager for England, but the way that he just keeps flirting with, oh, I might not, I don't know, you know, is this my last tournament? Is this not? We're not sure yet. But yeah, recording this Thursday morning, it sounds like in the papers at least today that he is looking to stay with England and extend it, and looking at you know, moving forward to the 2026 World Cup, and again whether or not the pressure that comes with it. You know, maybe there's another job that might come up that might entice him more as well, you know, because it is still a high-profile job, absolutely, at Man United, but it just still feels like at the minute it's still a bit of a hospital pass. I think, you know, the expectations are still high at that club, and maybe the setup isn't there. Yeah, Ineos could get that right, but it will take time. You know, you look at Manchester City when they got their funding from Abu Dhabi, and how long it took them to even start challenging for the Premier League. We're talking 3-4 years. Liverpool as well under Fenway Sports Group, it wasn't overnight. Arsenal as well, you know, the Cronkies have been there for God knows how long, and it's only in the last few years that have kind of woken up and realised how to fund the title challenge and how to make it right. So again with Chelsea, maybe, you know, as a side point on this, maybe we've been always a bit too harsh on Todd Boehly and the ownership group at Chelsea to expect too much too soon from them. Maybe we have been, but again with Man United, it is going to take time. It is going to be an instant an overnight thing. I could be wrong. Man United could be winning the title this time next year, wrapping it up after having won every game. We don't know. But history tells you that it is going to be a slow build at Man United. So again, maybe that's at this stage, is that what Gareth wants as if he was to move back into club management? I don't know. Maybe it's a, you know, a mix of combinations. Maybe he thinks that this England squad, he's seen something in it that thinks that they can win the World Cup in 2026, and, you know, the squad looks good anyway. So he wouldn't bet against them at least. But yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see the decision that he comes to. But it sounds like he's veering more towards staying with England at this point.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yes, so I think this is not the first we will be talking of Gareth Southgate's future in the next 4 or 5 months. But we'll move now to talking about England, which is kind of what the original point of this podcast was going to be. So heading into these two games, two really, really, I suppose I'd say big games, big opponents, you know, we're going to learn a lot, I think, from these two games. But there's players who really need to impress to make this Euro squad. And I've got a list here of players that are in the squad who need to impress, but also some players who aren't in the squad who are probably competing with the ones in the squad. So we've got Joe Gomez, Ezri Konsa, Jarrod Branthwaite, Kobbie Manu, Rashford, Watkins, Bowen, Palmer, Tony Gordon. It was so long there, I had to get rid of the first names. But all these, probably the fringe players, you would say, you know, they're the ones battling to earn a spot. And then you've got competition outside of that, Tomori, Gouye, Rico Lewis, Trippier, Colwill, Shaw, James, Phillips, Trent, Grealish, Eze, Wilson. There's a lot of players there who all of them feasibly could be in that England squad this summer. But for the ones in the squad, do you think A, they'll get the relevant playing time over these next two games to really be able to see them? But B, is it a case of impressing on the training ground to, you know, really put yourself at the forefront of Gareth Southgate's mind when it comes to squad selection for the summer?
They should be getting the opportunities. You would expect them to get the opportunities. You know, the thing is that these are friendlies. Yes, there's world ranking points available to it, but there's nothing else. There's no, you know, consequence of, oh, you know, it puts pressure on the next qualifier if we don't do this or that. So he needs to look at his squad. You would expect him to look at his squad, which is where it probably benefits being in this squad now rather than, you know, going back to November where there were still qualifiers to play for. And you know, England still had, you know, even though they wrapped it up, they were still trying to ensure that they were in that top seeding pot for a draw. They still had things to play for, at least in that, which is where maybe he was a little bit reluctant to kind of look at it. For those players that are in this squad, I think Joe Gomez probably has the best opportunity to force his way into Gareth's thinking for the Euros. You know, he's been in great form, but again, he offers that versatility, which I think, you know, the key thing is here for this Euros, we're back down to a 23-man squad now. For the previous Euros and for the World Cup, it was 26-man squads. We're back down to a very tight 23-man squad. And as the tournament goes on, if you pick up injuries or suspensions, you're not allowed to bring anyone in. So when you're looking at that and, you know, you compare, Joe Gomez can play centre-back. You know, he's done every single position, I think, for Liverpool this year, but he can play centre-back. He can play on both flanks of defence as well. Can Ezri Konsa offer that? No. Jared Branthwaite? No. I mean, you know, they have played in fullbacks, but I don't think they're as good as Joe Gomez there. Margay, Fikayo Tomori, we saw him play out of position at left back last time. I think Joe Gomez has that edge on and in those wide fullback positions, as well as being able to play centre half, that I think that could be what edge is Joe Gomez getting into the squad. You know, you list there and you kind of, you know, you feel sorry for players maybe like Jared Bowen or Anthony Gordon, because are they going to get in that squad ahead of Jack Grealish if he's fit and ready? Probably not. I think Gareth Southgate still trusts Jack Grealish. Are they fighting maybe for a position? Well, you kind of go through the wingers, you know, Rashford, Grealish, Saka, Foden. So that's four already in the 23-man squad. Can you really have another? You'll probably have James Maddison in that squad as well, maybe as cover for Jude Bellingham in that 10 role. But, you know, Maddison has played out on the wings. It's not his favourite position, but he has played out on the wings for England. So again, in terms of that versatility and that offering. So, you know, it might be a struggle for him. It's a great opportunity for him, and he will get a chance to show Gareth Southgate exactly what he can do. But, you know, in some positions, it's a little bit harder to make your presence felt than others. You know, and the strikers, you know, I know you had Callum Wilson listed as one who could potentially still force his way in, injury permitting. Again, you know, he's had a bit of a stop-start season so far. Did go to the World Cup last time. But this is one thing I think we're going to see a competition here. You know, I don't know what game it is. Maybe it is the first game because there are injury concerns over Harry Kane. Maybe Harry Kane doesn't feature in this window at all because of those injury concerns and it changes the plan slightly. But I do think we are going to see a game where Ollie Watkins starts one half and Ivan Toney starts another. But if there are injury concerns over Harry Kane, they might start a game each and they get a real chance to kind of show their worth and prove themselves for this England squad. But yes, I think, you know, there's some areas of the pitch where there's still positions to play for. Joe Gomez in that centre-half position, I think we'll look at maybe, you know, England could bring, looking at it, you know, especially at left-back, they don't have many left-backs that are fit and playing well this season. You know, Luke Shaw is going to be out and likely miss the Euros and we'll definitely face a race against time to get fit for that and previous fitness before it. Ben Chilwell's the only left-back in this squad. Kieran Trippier's missed out through injury, but you suspect that he'll be in it and he can cover left back as well. But then having Joe Gomez, you know, it's that kind of thing. How do you use your 23-man squad? And I think versatility could be key. In other positions, I think that, you know, it's just because injuries and otherwise are allowed, like Anthony Gordon, further forward into this squad. But I don't think they'll, as well as they could play and they could score a hat-trick against Brazil, for example, I still don't think that there'll be enough time for them to force themselves into the 23-man squad for the Euros.
Do you think that if you look at the England squad, do you think that Southgate is going to look at these final sort of nine Premier League games and games obviously across the continent because we've got plenty of players playing abroad? Do you think there's anyone that can play their way in at this stage if they have a hot end to the season? Or do you think that Southgate's basically got an idea of probably around 30 to 35 players and there's nobody likely bringing? Because we haven't included, say, Raheem Sterling on this list. I think it's been pretty widely accepted that he's probably finished as an England player under Gareth Southgate. But is there a chance that a player like him, who has obviously played a lot for England, can have a really hot end to the season. Mind you, take away that previous game against Leicester. If that's anything to go by, that won't happen. But he has a really hot end to the season. Maybe he gets 6 goals, 4 assists, Chelsea win 8 of the last 9 games. Is there a chance that a player like that can break into this England team? Or do you think Southgate is pretty set on roughly this core of about 30 to 35 who are going to be in his thinking?
I think even saying 30 to 35 is too high a number. I think it's clear, you know, and again from November, I think it was quite clear as well there that Gareth Southgate has a set squad and he probably has his preferred 23 in his head already, that he trusts, that he knows. Again, this is a big thing with Southgate, you know, it is trust and it is knowing a player can be dependable and called upon and perform well. You know, like we go back to previous squads and, you know, Harry Maguire ahead of Euro 2020 and Tyrone Mings, and I think Calvin Phillips as well, and everyone's thinking, what are they doing in this squad? And they all performed admirably whenever Gareth Southgate called upon him. World Cup in 2022, Harry Maguire's selection causing, you know, issues again because he wasn't playing well or regularly for Man United, goes out there and has a great tournament, I think, for England as well. So Southgate has, I think, a 23 in mind already. Honestly, I know that sounds weird, you know, and this would be in an ideal world, no injuries, no suspensions or whatever. It doesn't matter about form, I don't think so much. I think he has his 23 that he knows he can trust going to Germany. So I think we're probably actually, I think 30 is the top end of maybe what we're looking at of those players that he knows that he can trust. I think now it would be very, very hard for someone to force their way into it. You know, again, you look at someone like Dominic Solanke, we spoke about him last week on the podcast reacting to the England squad news, and I thought it was very, very harsh. Someone like Dominic Solanke hadn't been called into this squad to have a look at him. And he can have a phenomenal end to the season, and he can hit, you know, he could feasibly end the season as the top scoring Englishman in the Premier League. Okay, you know, Ollie Watkins has had a phenomenal year in terms of full-on goal involvements as well. You know, he's not just goals, it's assists that he's getting, and maybe that's where he trumps Dominic Solanke. But Dominic Solanke could end the season as the top-scoring Englishman in the Premier League, and we know that he probably has a very little chance of going on the plane to Germany this summer. You know, he's had a great season and he's still not forced his way in. So I don't even think in the last 9 games there's an opportunity for someone to force their way in. I think Gareth Southgate very much knows his ideal 23 without injuries, and it doesn't matter on form. And of course, injuries are going to impact that somewhat. There are going to be players that miss out that are going to pick up injuries between now and the end of the season. So with that in mind, I think he's probably looking at 30 max of who he can kind of sub in and replace. You know, okay, so if he gets injured, I'll put this player in instead. So I think, you know, and that's definitely been one thing with Gareth Southgate throughout. He knows who he can trust and he values that over more form, even though he says otherwise in press conferences, which is quite comical at times.
We'll switch to talking a little bit about the England v Brazil game. I suppose the first point to start, we touched on it a little bit there in terms of team selection, but what do you expect Southgate to do with the team? Because I think I advocate normally to see like the players who are on the fringe to play more. However, putting in 11 players who are never going to start together for a game doesn't actually make much sense. You're better off starting a core of like 7 or 8 and seeing how periphery players fit into that, aren't you? You know, see how that you want to play your 10 and then see what Ollie Watkins looks like in the actual England team when you see it in the Euros this summer. Do you expect Southgate to maybe do that, play sort of 7 or 8 regulars in this game and then around the edges maybe tinker with things he wants to see? Or do you think maybe he'll try going with a 45 minutes one team, 45 minutes another team and see how they do?
No, I think you're correct. I think he needs to do the first option and not the second option. I think he, you know, again, with Gareth Southgate, again, with his idea of trust, is that he knows probably now that starting 11 that he wants for that first game against Serbia and Gelsenkirchen. He knows who he wants to play. So it's a case of then, okay, so if he gets injured, you know, and using Harry Kane as a prime example, I think he has a great, you know, history of picking up ankle injuries and ankle knocks. Definitely at Spurs, I think he was picking up one every season towards the end. So, you know, we kind of almost labelled him injury prone, I think, in the end. You know, the number of ankle knocks and knee knocks he was picking up throughout a campaign. But you want to then see, okay, as you said there, can, if we play our first choice midfield, whatever that would be, and, you know, probably at this point, unfortunately, it would be Henderson, Rice and Bellingham picking up from the World Cup, how does he slot in? How does he play Bellingham in the 10? You know, would you play Saka and Foden on flanks? Would you give Rashford a start just to see whether or not that works better or will? You know, fullbacks, do you look at... The thing is that I was about to say, do you look at Joe Gomez at right back and against Brazil, for example, in that first game? I think you probably look at him more at left back because ideal world, you know, Kyle Walker's going to start right back probably that first game for him, and Kiel Trippier, you'd hope his fit would start that game. You know, if Ben Chilwell was to pick up an injury, England don't look like they're going to go into a Euros with a fit first choice left back. So you would look at Joe Gomez, then you probably play the rest of that back line. So you play Walker, you play Stanchi or Pryor. Is there any point in changing the goalkeeper? Probably not, because, you know, I don't think it will change too much. And unless Jordan Pickford picks up an injury, I think it's clear as day that there's no one fighting over that. And again, I don't think it's going to change the game plan too much, you know. It's just whether or not you want to give them minutes. One player that I would like to see against Brazil, though, is Kobbie Mainoo, because I think he could be a difference maker. And I think I'd rather see him in midfield with Rice, with Bellingham. I know we were saying about, you know, would you play that three just to give Watkins a bit of time to get used to them if it is going to be Henderson that starts? But I want to see Mainoo. I want to see what he can do in that midfield. And I know we'll probably talk about him a little bit more in a second, but I want to see what he does in that midfield against a great team as well. So, no, you're right. I think there's definitely going to be one game where we're going to get a very, very clear insight into that starting 11 that England are going to play against Serbia. And it's just those, you know, maybe in this squad, maybe in that starting 11, there's a couple of places that are still up for grabs. And maybe that's what we'll see in one of the games, that we will see 8 maybe of that starting 11, and then we'll have a look at those two. How does he drop in? Does he play better with this one? How does this team support him in this role and everything like that, which could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I think you can probably change like one player in each area of the field, can't you? You can change one forward, one midfielder, one defender, and I think you would see still the structure of that team. How important are these games, you know, England playing Brazil and Belgium, but how important are these games in the grand scheme of things? Or is it very much a case of, you know, a club pre-season where you're just trying to figure out exactly, you know, how things fit together? Do you think it's more important than just a friendly, or do you think this is really just a chance for Southgate to look at his team in a competitive, semi-competitive environment with a big crowd?
Is it bad if I say that I think they're really pointless and I don't see the point of them? I think that might be quite terrible if I say that. But look, it's always good to test yourself against good opposition. Brazil and maybe Belgium are kind of on the way down, but they've had their golden generation. They've not won anything yet. Could change this summer. Who knows? You know, maybe Domenico Tedesco is the man to do that, where Roberto Martinez wasn't. You know, but they're not as scary a prospect as they were maybe 4 years ago. It's still good to test yourself. That being said, England went into the World Cup, and I know that they didn't progress past France, but I think, you know, they gave France a very good game. And I thought that they played well in the most part throughout the World Cup, and they went into that having not won a competitive game in 2022, you know, lost to Hungary in the Nations League. Was it 4-0 that we lost? It lost twice to Hungary in the Nations League, wasn't it? 1-0 away from home and then 4-0 at Wolves. And you're kind of thinking, this is a complete disaster. But that was in competitive matches against, you know, low-ranked oppositions. Frankly, the pressure's off a little bit. You know, they'll still learn things from it. But I don't know. I think maybe you're still too far out as well. Like, you know, you say they're club pre-season, but club pre-season days, you know, you're probably playing friendlies between 4 weeks and 2 weeks. You know, some clubs like to push it even to a week before your opening match of the season, opening competitive match of the season. But, you know, we're still 3 months out from the first game of the Euros here at this point. We'll learn more, and we can say maybe it's more pre-season when we get to the fixtures against Austria and Bosnia just before the competition starts. But for this one, it's that weird one. It's just a really strange international window, I think, before an international tournament, because so much can change now as well. You could have an absolute disaster, and your entire starting 11 against Brazil could all pick up injuries between now and the end of the season, which then completely throws anything that you've learned from these two friendlies out the window massively. So then you kind of have to rejig and restart. You know, look, you have to be very, very, very unfortunate for that to happen, I know, but it's still a possibility. So it's that weird one that there'll be little things that you learn, but I don't think you can get too much of an insight into a competition, much like, again, you know, 4 or 5 months before England went to the World Cup and played well, like I said, in the most part, they were losing home and away to Hungary. And that wouldn't have been an indicator to a good side, but there was so much time in between them that things changed, circumstances changed. And yeah, like I say, I think the learnings from this window will be small, I think.
just thinking there that Belgium entrusted Roberto Martinez with their golden generation. Terrible. We'll finish off, though. We'll talk a bit about Manu Mania, you know, which seems to be building up at the minute, the feeling around the 18-year-old. We did mention that you would hope that he gets minutes in these games, but he was a late call-up. He wasn't in the original squad, was he? He came in, you know, sort of a few days later. Do you think he'll get minutes in these games? And do you think he could actually be the answer to sitting with Declan Rice, replacing Calvin Phillips, who's had that role previously and clearly, you know, he's struggling? Do you think he could be the answer for England in that area?
The only issue that I've got is, at the minute, look at how Declan Rice is playing at Arsenal, and he's got someone who just sits next to him in Jorginho. And that allows Declan Rice to kind of be more box-to-box. And the kind of thing that I'm looking at with... And the comparisons that I see with Kobbie Mainoo is that, you know, you've got people talking about, I see shades of Clement Seedorf in him, I see shades of Bastian Schweinsteiger in him. And those are two players that like to get forward as well. Declan Rice likes to get forward. Would we end up then in the situation where we have in 2024, would have had a 16-year-old Kobbie Mainoo at that point. But in 2024, where we have another version of the, you know, Lampard-Gerrard, who sits, who holds debate. You know, they're both good defensive players and they would do their share of it. But you kind of wonder, I think it's exciting. I think he could be the jigsaw, the final piece in the jigsaw for England. But it's... Would someone like Jordan Henderson and just say, Hendo, you are not allowed past the halfway line, sit there, don't go any further than that, would that then allow Declan Rice to play that same role that he's playing for Arsenal to such great effect this season, be that box-to-box player that we're now seeing that could carry the ball, drive forward, you know, kind of almost Yaya Touré-esque in a way. And everyone said that Rice had that in his locker and everyone kind of laughed and, you know, oh, you know, what do you think? But we're now seeing that he actually does and he can do that and you know, making those bursts forward. Would playing someone that is similar to him, I think, in Kobbie Mainoo next to him, would that be good or bad, having two similar players? It's that weird one, but it's something that we'll only find out if Gareth Southgate gives him minutes. That's the reason why I think he needs to sit. I think he needs to play him in the midfield. I think we know that midfield, again, going back to the World Cup in 2022, we know a midfield of Bellingham, Rice and Henderson works. It worked well for England. When Henderson came in for Calvin Phillips, they started to improve. I know they played well against Iran when Phillips started, but definitely I think the performances got better when Henderson came into the side to play that sitting role alongside Declan Rice. But we won't find out unless Kobbie Mainoo gets minutes whether or not, you know, he helps or hinders Declan Rice in this England squad and helps or hinders England allowing Declan Rice to play the role that he's playing for Arsenal. Be an interesting one. Hope he gets minutes. And, you know, I am pretty certain that Gareth Southgate would have only called him into the squad if he foresaw a position where he was able to give him minutes, because otherwise it's a waste that he should be playing for the under-21s. Again, in his development, he needs to be playing rather than sitting on the bench. So he should get some minutes, at least a half, and should be starting at least one game, I think.
I think Mainoo, therefore, is actually more the backup to Declan Rice. I hadn't thought about it that way, that we kind of don't have a backup for a player that does similar things to Declan Rice. Do you think he is actually in the squad because if Rice gets injured, there's somebody you can plug in there that can do similar things?
Potentially, but I hope that they use in tandem. You can have two players that are similar, that can do similar things. But again, it's, you know, we had this discussion about further forward and why Ollie Watkins is in. Yeah, not to say why is Ollie Watkins in the squad. He's having a great season. What we mean is why Ollie Watkins might be better placed to, if England were to only have one striker as backup to Harry Kane, why he might be better placed than Ivan Toney. It's because you can kind of see him, the way that he plays, the fact that he's got so many goals and assists this season that he could start for Harry Kane. And you kind of see him as a, not necessarily light for light, but someone that could kind of, you know, fulfil that Kane role if Kane was to get injured. And yeah, you're right there. England don't have who could play like Declan Rice does, and that could be an issue for him in the tournament. You know, it'd be a hell of a responsibility to play some Kobbie Mainoo's 18-year-old shoulders. Oh, by the way, Declan's injured. Go and play like him, lad. Sure, he'd probably step up to it and enjoy it. But yeah, you're right there. I don't think, you know, Bellingham playing that 10, would you then? Yeah, I mean, you might be able to get away with dropping Bellingham a little bit deeper and play Maddison in that 10 as well, but you want to give yourself options within a squad so that you can kind of try and keep your best players in their best positions as much as you can. So that might be a prospect as well. Maybe that we'll see Bellingham, Henderson and Mainoo rather than Mainoo alongside Rice and Bellingham in midfield instead.
Cool. Well, we are just about out of time here, Ned. So thanks for joining me this morning. And yeah, you know, make sure you like, subscribe, so you always get this podcast wherever you listen to it. And we'll catch you next time. It'll be Monday with John and Andy, I imagine. We'll be reviewing, hopefully, an England win and previewing the game against Belgium.